low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Bruce, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the recent issues of the Jamestown Post Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From Friday, July 31st of 2026, one of the top stories, ISO calls for new generation transmission upgrades, article by John Whitaker. The State Independent System Operator sees a continued reliance on fossil fuel resources to maintain power grid reliability for at least the next 20 years. Much has changed over the past 3 years since the 2023-2042 outlook was published by the ISO. Federal actions have scrutinized and delayed construction of offshore wind projects, and the State Public Service Commission withdrew the New York City public policy transmission need based on new challenges surrounding offshore wind development. At the same time, renewable project development has slowed, and recent state analysis have highlighted challenges in achieving CLCPA targets on the current timelines. The NYISO's reliability analysis has also identified emerging immediate reliability needs in New York City and Long Island, reflecting tightening system conditions driven by generator retirements and limited new entry. What hasn't changed, in the ISO's eyes, is a lack of new zero-emission technology that provides dispatchable and reliable power when needed. Notably, hydrogen-based generation could provide zero emissions, firm capacity, and operational flexibility, but it is not currently available at commercial scale and would require significant investment in new infrastructure for fuel production, storage, and transportation, which does not exist today. Absent significant progress in the development of new zero-emissions technology, continued reliance on fossil resources, including repowering and new additions, will be necessary to maintain reliability, the Outlook 2025-2044 report states. New York's electricity demand is expected to grow over the next two decades, driven by electrification and emerging large loads that increase total energy needs and reshape when and where demand occurs. All scenarios for a reliable power grid through 2042 require significant new generation, and policy-driven scenarios require far more installed capacity than exists today to reliably meet demand, the ISO states in the report. Transmission capability is increasingly central to system performance, and the cost to create an emissions-free power grid will be hardest near the end of the process. Planning scenarios that move from 95 to 100% emissions-free electricity require substantially more investment in replacement resources and anticipate technologies not yet available at commercial scale. By comparison, other scenarios that also lower emissions significantly do so with much lesser investment in generation and transmission. The System and Resource Outlook highlights the scale and urgency of the investments needed to reliably serve New York's future electricity needs, said Zach Smith, ISO Senior Vice President of Systems and Resource Planning. Rising demand, generator retirements, and public policy choices all point to the need for new resources and stronger transmission. An all-of-the-above approach to energy development, supported by competitive wholesale electricity markets, will be critical to maintaining grid reliability through this transition. The ISO is calling on policymakers to establish a viable path for developing firm, flexible resources needed to maintain reliability, to coordinate the timing of new resources, repowering opportunities and retirements, to reduce transmission risk, to reduce congestion and increase transfer capability across the Central East Interface through targeted enhancements, and support zero emissions generation development in northern New York with bulk transmission upgrades that improve deliverability. New power development needed ranges from 105 gigawatts of new capacity in a zero-emission power grid to between 30 and 60 gigawatts for a power grid with lower but not zero emissions. Less than 15 gigawatts have been added in New York over the past 25 years. The limited emissions model described by the ISO would use fossil-fueled resources infrequently on an as-needed basis to provide firm capacity, support system flexibility, and reduce the need for large-scale deployment of alternative dispatchable resource types. In these cases, as the aging fossil fleet is replaced with new, more efficient generation, less emissions are created for each unit of electricity produced. The outlook also calls for transmission upgrades given the power demands downstate and the location of many renewable projects upstate. It calls specifically for transmission upgrades in northern New York, an area identified as an area with the potential for high renewable energy development that needs to be coupled with bulk transmission capability. Transmission development is central to enabling future resource additions to efficiently serve demand, the outlook states. While new generation is often developed where resources are most available, primarily in upstate regions, the highest demand and most constrained load centers remain downstate. As a result, system performance increasingly depends on the ability to transfer energy across the state, making transmission capability a key detriment of efficient system design. Planner discusses zoning updates, safe streets. Article by Sarah Holthaus. Multiple projects are ongoing for the city's Department of Development. The city planner, Jason Kulaszewski, recently presented a few updates on items, such as the comprehensive plan and the upcoming National Night Out event, to the city's Planning Commission. For the comprehensive plan, Kulaszewski said things are moving forward following City Council approval last month, and the public comments and feedback are still being incorporated into the final plan. The final comprehensive plan will include all of the comments and feedback and should be ready for review by the end of the month, he added. So that's going to move into zoning update, Kulaszewski said. We're still working with CNS on that. They've started to reach out to folks from the ZBA as well as our code enforcement officer, and our codes team will be meeting with them, and we shared a short list of folks to reach out to for initial engagement about the zoning. So that we'll be moving forward here, and I will continue to give updates as that moves forward as well. As for National Night Out, Jamestown's event is set for August 4th at Bergman Park from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. Kulaszewski noted that the event is on a Tuesday, but added the city does not pick the day as the event is nationwide. The whole idea is to engage with residents, Kulaszewski said. Police and fire will be there, as well as local nonprofit organizations and other organizations. There will be games, food, and family-friendly events. So I just wanted to get that on folks' radar. A few other announcements from Kulaszewski to the Planning Commission, including that the city, in partnership with the Chautauqua County Land Bank, will be hosting a hands-on 2.0 community cleanup on August 1st. Sign-up is available online through the Chautauqua County Land Bank, in the same way as people signed up for the last hands-on event in the late spring and early summer. Kulaszewski said sign-up should be exactly the same, and that this event will be at McCrae Park. Kulaszewski gave a brief update on the city's Safe Streets for All, as it moves to the next phase. The top 10 areas to prioritize with the project have been identified, and the city is now looking for feedback from the community to make sure they have identified the correct top 10 locations, how to prioritize these locations, and if the locations are not right, what other locations there are. All material remains on the Safe Streets for All website But Kulaszewski added the website is being updated. I've added additional materials from the last steering committee meetings, uploaded presentations from those committee meetings, as well as the information that that was shared. Kulaszewski said part of the web update is adding a link to the survey. So the materials for the survey are all online, while we're also through the update process. Planning Commission members asked about any new and exciting upcoming projects, and he noted that the consultant team that is working with New York State is the group in charge of coordination and communication. So everyone is following their lead, especially as the process has changed slightly since the city was awarded DRI funding the first time around. Jamestown was one of the first cities to get DRI funding in 2016, Kulaszewski said. Over the past 10 years, the state has kind of adjusted their process a little bit to streamlining it and make it easier to keep projects on track. So we're taking their lead on the process piece right now. In terms of specific projects for the DOD, Kulaszewski said there are not too many coming down the pipeline right now. Older projects, such as Gateway Lofts, also have no updates at the moment, he said. Other projects, such as Water Street Brewing Company, are still actively in the works and moving towards their finish line, though it was noted that they have faced some delays but are still hoping to finish up in August, the last that the DOD has heard. First step toward Rome, St. Luke's to host car wash today, which is already happened. Jamestown native turns 100 today. Article by Sarah Holthouse. Jamestown native Dorothy Jean Fuller Lundeen and the Floor Hotel have something in common. They're both turning 100 this year. Lundeen's birthday is today. Her son Daniel Lumsden said she was born Dorothy Jean Fuller on July 31, 1926, at WCA Hospital. She lived in Stillwater on a dairy farm with her parents John W. and Lily Fuller. On May 4, 1946, Dorothy Jean Fuller Lundeen married Donald W. Lundeen and celebrated 70 years of marriage until his death December 2nd of 2016. The pair lived on Manchester Road in Jamestown and raised three children there, Drusilla, Danny, and Diete, before moving to Tampa, Florida in 1962. Dorothy currently lives in Zephyr Hills, Florida. She also worked in Tampa at HRS for 20 years before retirement. Dorothy is spending her actual birthday Friday with her three children and their spouses at the Floor Hotel, which houses the Dan Restaurant. Daniel Lundeen said Dorothy has fond memories of dining there over the years. The old Floridian Hotel was built in 1926, so Lundeen noted it is celebrating 100 years as well. On Saturday, family and friends are gathering at her granddaughter's house for the big celebration, Lundeen said. Dorothy has spent most of her life active with family, friends, and the First Methodist Church of Zephyr Hills, where she is active in Project Others. Volunteers needed for United Way's second annual Day of Caring. Registration is now open for United Way of Chautauqua County's second annual Day of Caring, a local day of service which brings together individuals, community groups, families, and businesses to complete volunteer projects at sites throughout the county. All projects are 2.5 hours long, and some options in the morning and others in the afternoon. Many of the project sites are family-friendly, and each project is designed to help the participating organizations advance their missions and expand their capacity for critical services. The United Way's 2026 Day of Caring will be held Friday, August 21st, with volunteer registration ending Friday, August 14th. In 2025, a total of 66 individuals provided nearly 300 volunteer hours, completing more than a dozen projects at 12 sites. This year, the United Way has coordinated with 13 agencies to offer projects at 15 sites with more than 100 volunteers needed. To view the individual projects and sites or to register as a volunteer, visit UnitedWayCHQ.org or text CARINGCHQ to 41444. Day of Caring is a powerful example of what happens when a community comes together with a shared purpose, said Eric Ronaldo, United Way of Chautauqua County Community Impact Manager. When you register to volunteer, you're doing more than giving a few hours of your time. You're helping United Way strengthen organizations and support families at every stage of life. United Way of Chautauqua County's 2026 Day of Caring is being put on in partnership with Live CHQ and Univera. Every volunteer will receive a Day of Caring t-shirt to wear at their project site. Workplaces are encouraged to volunteer in teams. For more information, visit UnitedWayCHQ.org, text CARINGCHQ to 41444, or contact Eric Ronaldo calling 716-483-1561 or emailing eronaldo@unitedwaychq.org. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Jamestown Post-Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Challengers need to spice up insipid races. Article by John DiAgostino. As the month of July melts into the sunset, August begins to turn up the heat when it comes to this campaign season. In both Pennsylvania and New York, it appears incumbents are in complete control, with the election 95 days away. Republican gubernatorial challenger Bruce Blakeman is hoping that is not the case in the Empire State. Earlier this week, a poll released found 47% of those surveyed said they'd back Governor Kathy Hochul, compared to 43% who supported the current Nassau County executive, with 10% of registered voters undecided. That poll, conducted by a pro-Blakeman super PAC, brought some life to an otherwise dismal and stumbling effort. The latest poll confirms what we have consistently seen over the last 2 months in various polls, both statewide and in congressional districts, that have me neck and neck with Kathy Hochul, he said. We are poised for a great victory, which will cut taxes, reduce electric bills, and make for safer communities, which people are craving but not getting from the current governor. A Blakeman victory would salvage some optimism for turning the politics of Albany in a different direction. But before the anti-Hochul crowd gets too optimistic, they need to understand that their candidate is hollow on solutions. Sound bites focus on tax cuts and a pledge to lower skyrocketing energy costs. Both are appealing ideas that lack any real specifics for getting it done. In the contest for state comptroller, longtime incumbent Thomas DiNapoli had a strong showing in the Democratic primary in June. His challenger, Republican Joseph Hernandez, says he aims to restore discipline, independence, and accountability to an office that directly impacts every taxpayer and public worker. On the federal level, U.S. Representative Nick Langworthy in District 23 is being challenged by Democrat Aaron Guise, who considers health care and more funding for education as his priorities. I've spent my life serving communities as a teacher, nonprofit leader, and person of faith, Guise says of his campaign website. I've waited tables, I've balanced books for a Main Street business, I've worked on a nonprofit farm, I know what families carry, I know what rising costs do. I'm running for Congress to refocus government on what really matters to Western New Yorkers, making a good life affordable for everyone. Guise said this week he will be doing a town hall event at 5:30 p.m. Thursday at the Prendergast Library in Jamestown. For his part, Langworthy is a strong President Trump, Donald Trump supporter, and has been seen by those who oppose his politics as someone who avoids his constituents by refusing to hold town hall meetings. In his two previous elections, Langworthy has handily defeated previous candidates by by more than 29% each time. In the area state races, incumbent Senator George Borrello is facing opposition from Democratic candidate Victoria Guti Williams in District 57. Since taking the seat in 2019, Borrello has been as popular as fireworks on the 4th of July with his constituents. He did not face a challenge 2 years ago. Guyt Williams says the lack of challenger is a key reason she is in the race, and notes on her website she believes the housing instability, health care failures, and erosion of public trust are not accidental, but the result of deliberate policy choices that can be and should be corrected. Assemblyman Andrew Molitor, who represents District 150 as a Republican, is facing off against Tom Carl, former Chautauqua County legislator. Carl is undaunted by previous failed campaigns against powerhouses Langworthy in the 2024 race for Congress and P.J. Weldon in the 2025 race for county executive. In his 2 years of service, Molitor keeps gaining confidence while in the position and truly loves the interaction with the community. Carl, who has a conservative background from leading private sector, strongly believes in keeping costs down. However, the party backing him is notorious for overspending in Albany. Over the border, Governor Josh Shapiro is seen as a rising star in the Democratic Party. In the fairly bipartisan Pennsylvania, the incumbent holds a 13-point lead in recent Quinnipiac poll over Stacey Garrity, the Republican candidate. Similar to New York, the local Warren County federal and state races are leaning toward the Republicans. U.S. Representative Glenn G.T. Thompson is seeking his 10th congressional term for the 15th district. He is facing former intelligence and former foreign service officer Ray Bilger, who resides in State College. State Representative Kathy Rapp, who has served since December 1st of 2004, is facing a competition for re-election. A recent poll done by Times Observer correspondent Jeff Haight found plenty of disappointment with the incumbent, while others sang her praises. Her opponent is Destiny Howard, who grew up in Ellington but has lived in Warren for the past 7 years. Midterm elections have been in the national spotlight in recent months. On a local level, there does not seem to be a vocal dissatisfaction with the incumbents at the moment. Over the next 3 months, however, the sentiment can always change for the voters. Josh DiAgostino is the editor for the Post Journal, Observer, and Times Observer in Warren, PA. Send comments to jdiagostino@observertoday.com. or call 716-487-1111, extension 253. Dedicated Leadership. WCA Foundation honors outgoing board members, welcomes new members. The WCA Foundation recently held its 44th annual meeting at UPMC Chautauqua. During the meeting, board members and staff reflected on the foundation's accomplishments, celebrated key milestones, and recognized two leaders whose service helped guide a period of growth and transformation. James Pullen Jr., outgoing foundation board chairman, and James Damagala, outgoing board treasurer and finance committee chairman, were honored for their 9 years of service to the foundation. During their tenure, the foundation strengthened its operations, enhanced its investment performance, expanded its philanthropic impact, and increased its support of UPMC Chautauqua and the patients it serves. Their leadership helped advance key initiatives, including the hiring of the foundation's first full-time executive director, strengthening donor stewardship efforts, and expanding philanthropic support for healthcare programs and services at UPMC Chautauqua. The leadership and dedication demonstrated by Jim Pullen and Jim Damagala over the past 9 years have left a lasting mark on the foundation, said Kristen Melville, executive director of the WCA Foundation. They have been exceptional stewards of our mission, and their vision, commitment, and support have helped position the foundation for continued success. We are deeply grateful for their service and the legacy they leave behind. The WCA Foundation welcome new board leadership. Newly elected officers who will serve for 1 year, Kelly Johnson Esquire, Chair, Judge Jeffrey Piazza, Vice Chair, Peter Morganti, Treasurer and Finance Chair, and John A. Chip Johnson, Secretary. We're excited to begin collaborating with this fantastic team of skilled and knowledgeable professionals, Melville said. In sports, New York Invasion, article by Matt Spielman. Teams have been practicing the past 2 weeks in preparation for the 2026 Big 30 All-Star Charities Classic football game, set for 7 p.m. on Saturday, August 1st at Bradford Area High School's Parkway Field. The Southwestern Frewsburg coaching staff will be leading the New York team this year. Jake Burkholder is the head coach. Burkholder has 10 years of experience coaching at Southwestern, the past 7 as the head coach. He was a Bill Walsh diversity internship candidate with the Philadelphia Eagles in both 2021 and 2023. Burkholder's assistants are Rob Colver, defensive coordinator, Terry Gray, assistant coach, Kevin Salisbury, offensive line coach, Chent Gray, quarterbacks and defensive backs coach, and Matthew Miles, another assistant coach. Quarterbacks for the New York team will be Salamanca's Peyton Bradley, Pioneer's Logan Marsh, Olean's Joe Mest, and Gowanda's Carter Capozzi. Bradley is 6'5", 210 pounds, and also plays safety. He plans to attend college to earn a degree in physical education and become a teacher coach. Bradley's favorite football memory was catching the game-winning touchdown pass his sophomore year against Leroy in the Far West Regional to send the Warriors to the state semifinals. Marsh is 7'7", 130 pounds, and also plays safety. He plans to become a heavy equipment operator. Mest is 6'3", 185 pounds, and also plays safety. He plans to attend college to pursue a degree in business. Mest wants to play in the Big 30 game because it has always been an inspiration of his to represent his state and school and to follow in his uncle's and brother's footsteps. Capozzi is 6'4", 185 pounds. He will attend Alfred State to play football and study finance. Capozzi was an All-State quarterback his junior and senior years with the Panthers. His best football memory was throwing the game-winning touchdown with 1 second remaining to beat Randolph. Running backs for the New York team include Portville's Demetrius Valencio Young, Olean's Dominic Herleman, Portville's Jake Ziegler, Cattaraugus Little Valley's Dylan Swanson, Gowanda's Winter Muntley Peters, Franklinville's Landon Learn, and Chautauqua Little Valley's Quinn Genora. Valencio Young is 5'10", 185 pounds, and also plays defensive end. He would like to be a canine trooper for the New York State Police and or SWAT team member. Valencio Young wants to play in the Big 30 game to have a great time, make friends, and absolutely tear up the field. Herleman is 6'8", 155 pounds, and also plays cornerback. He plans to attend college to get a degree in physical education. Herleman wants to play in the Big 30 game because it has been his dream since he watched his older brother and cousin play in it. Weatherly is 5'6", 150 pounds, and also plays defensive end. Ziegler is 6'2", 190 pounds, and also plays defensive end. He plans to attend college to major in exercise science before becoming a physician's assistant or New York State trooper. Swanson is 5'11", 200 pounds, and also plays middle linebacker. He plans on going into the workforce as a diesel mechanic. Ever since I was little, playing for a youth league in Bradford, I wanted to play on the Owls field one last time, like I did in the championship game all those years ago. Mentley Peters is 5'9", 175 pounds, and also plays linebacker. He will attend Alfred State College to pursue a degree in athletic training while playing football. Mentley Peters was an All-State running back and League Defensive Player of the Year. Learn is 5'11", 185 pounds, and also plays outside linebacker. He plans to go to college and major in physical education. Learn wants to play in the Big 30 game because it's a huge opportunity not many people get, and he feels he can't pass up this offer. Janora is 6'2", 185 pounds, and also plays outside linebacker, safety, and defensive end. The New York team's wide receivers include Bolivar Richburg's Kingston Laux, Olean's Michael Rivera, Gwanda's Lucas Barrett, Randolph's Gavin Larson, Olean's Kane DeGlaulier, Franklinville's Tristan Hennard, and Allegheny Limestone's Christopher Fournay. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Jamestown Post-Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Laux is 6'1", 175 pounds, and also plays safety. He plans to attend Molloy University to play football and basketball while majoring in sports management. Laux's best memory while playing football was making the best one-handed catch of his life and going to the sectional playoffs in the same season. Rivera is 6'3", 195 pounds, and also plays linebacker. He plans to attend college to study sports management while playing basketball. Rivera's best football memory was a 97-yard touchdown against Albion. Barrett is 5'8", 150 pounds, and also plays safety. He wants to play in the Big 30 game for one last chance to play his favorite game growing up. Larson is 6'11", 140 pounds, and also plays cornerback. He wants to continue his football career in college while majoring in criminal justice. Larson had previous family members play in the Big 30 game, so he wants to be a part of it as well. DeGaulier is 6', 175 pounds, and also plays outside linebacker. He plans to attend Alfred State College for heavy equipment operation. Hennard is 6'10", 150 pounds, and also plays safety. His best memory playing football was youth football in the mud doing Oklahoma drills. Forney is 6'7", 150 pounds, and also plays cornerback. Randolph's Regan Smith is the fullback for the New York team. Smith is 5'11", 170 pounds, and also plays outside linebacker. He plans to attend college and major in welding. Smith's best football memory was playing at Highmark Stadium. Tight ends for the New York team are Cuba Rushford's Adam Rowe, Pioneer's Stryker Cale, Cattaraugus Little Valley's Grady Merrill, Southwestern's George Marshall, and Frewsburg's Henry Eckert. Rowe is 6'3", 205 pounds, and also plays safety. He plans to attend St. Bonaventure University and major in finance. Cale is 6'1", 165 pounds, and also plays outside linebacker. He plans to enroll in college to study sports management. Cale lists his hobbies as working out, MMA, and golf. Merrill is 6'4", 195 pounds, and also plays defensive end. He plans to attend the University at Buffalo to earn a degree in civil engineering. The Big 30 game will be his last hurrah, and playing will be a tribute to everyone who has gotten me there. Marshall is 6', 200 pounds, and also plays linebacker. He wants to attend college to major in mechanical engineering. Marshall's best memory playing football was making it to Highmark Stadium for his last ever high school game. Eckert is 6', 190 pounds, and also plays linebacker. Offensive linemen for the New York team include Pioneer's Justin Mall, Gowanda's Jaden John, Olean's Calvin Williams, Cattaraugus Little Valley's Devin Otto, Ellicottville's Nolan Murphy, Olean's Mike Ellman, Southwestern's Carson Kochenour, Portville's Ian Chamberlain, Ellicottville's Grady Byroads, Portville's Ty Kaczynski, Pioneer's Dylan Doty, Southwestern's Kelvin Salisbury, Cuba Rushford's Landa Hendricks, Cattaraugus Little Valley's Bryce Corbin, and Genesee Valley's Riley Rogers. Mall is a 6'1", 190-pound guard who also plays defensive end. He plans to attend SUNY Geneseo to earn a bachelor's degree in biology. Mall wants to play in the Big 30 game because it raises money for charity and provides players with a unique experience. John is a 5'10", 250-pound guard who also plays defensive tackle. He plans to attend college for general arts while also wrestling. He wants to play in the Big 30 game to be able to put on pads one more time to knock someone around before he moves on with his life. Williams is a 5'11", 240-pound left tackle who also plays defensive tackle. He plans to attend Alfred State College for a culinary degree. Williams lists the Walter J. Reisner Award as one of his biggest honors. Otto is a 6'2", 265-pound tackle who also plays defensive tackle. He plans to attend St. Bonaventure University to become a flight nurse in the U.S. Air Force. Otto's best memory playing football was almost getting a pick six on his first ever interception. Murphy is 6'1", 215-pound guard who also plays defensive end. He plans to attend Alfred State College to major in auto body collision repair. Murphy's favorite memory playing football was playing at Highmark Stadium as a junior. Ellman is a 5'8", 190-pound center. He plans to become a United States Marine. Ellman's top honors include Most Improved Wrestler and Most Committed Husky Captain. Kouchner is a 6', 220-pound center who also plays defensive end. He plans to attend college to become a teacher and coach. Kouchner lists his hobbies as football, basketball, and going to the races. Chamberlain is a 6'1", 285-pound tackle who also plays defensive tackle. He plans to attend college and play a sport. After that, he would like to become a firefighter and EMT. Byroads is a 6'2", 230-pound guard who also plays defensive line. He will attend Alfred State College for construction trades and continue to play football while volunteering for the fire department. Byroads' best memory playing football was an interception against Randolph to help send his team to Highmark Stadium. Kosinski is a 5'11", 250-pound center guard who also plays defensive tackle. He plans to get a job in heavy equipment operation. Kaczynski wanted to play in the Big 30 game from a young age because he thought it would be a neat getting seniors from New York and Pennsylvania to play one more game against each other. Doughty is a 6'1", 225-pound guard who also plays defensive end. He plans to get a job in the welding industry. Doughty's best memory while playing football was the friendship brotherhood with Coach Dupree. Salisbury is a 6'1", 300-pound lineman who also plays defensive tackle. He plans to attend SUNY Brockport to major in accounting while playing football. Salisbury's favorite football team is the San Francisco 49ers, and favorite player is Jason Kelsey. Hendricks is 5'10", 200 pounds, and also plays defensive tackle. Corbin is 6', 255 pounds, and also plays defensive tackle. Rogers is 6'7", 235 pounds, and also plays defensive tackle. Pine Valley's Cameron Slade will play middle linebacker. He is 6', 220 pounds, and plans to attend college to play football while graduating with a degree in criminal justice. The Section 6 Class D Defensive Player of the Year and a first-team All-State performer in 2024 wants to play in the Big 30 game because he will be coming back from an injury and wants to prove he still has it. His favorite NFL player is Mike Alstott. Portville's 5'9", 145-pound Connor Rolo will be New York kicker. He wants to continue his welding career at Ohio Technical College. Partnerships highlight world-class Lake Erie fishery. Article by Forrest Fisher. The Lake Erie shoreline of Western New York has quietly become one of the region's greatest economic and recreational success stories. Thanks to decades of conservation efforts that have restored water quality and strengthened fish populations, Lake Erie now boasts one of North America's premier freshwater fisheries. Anglers from across the country travel here in pursuit of trophy walleye, smallmouth bass, yellow perch, lake trout, and steelhead, creating an economic ripple effect that benefits local businesses, tourism, marinas, charter captains, restaurants, lodging facilities, and waterfront communities. That success was on full display during a special Lake Erie VIP experience event hosted Wednesday at the Clarion Hotel Pavilion in Dunkirk. Guests of the Eastern Lake Erie Charter Boat Association, Chautauqua County Visitors Bureau, Visit Buffalo Niagara, and Erie County Department of Environment and Planning were invited to experience the fishery firsthand, with a half-day walleye charter aboard boats operated by the Eastern Basin Lake Erie Charter Association, followed by a catered luncheon focused on the future of Lake Erie. The program actually began the evening before with a meet and greet at the hotel restaurant, where visiting outdoor media members had the opportunity to visit with Lake Erie charter captains and learn firsthand about the fishery that has become a cornerstone of the region's outdoor economy. Mother Nature, however, had other plans. Strong north and west winds pushed 4 to 6 foot waves into Dunkirk Harbor, sending water crashing over the breakwalls and prompting a National Ocean Service small craft advisory. With safety the priority, organizers wisely canceled the fishing portion of the event. Instead of heading home, attendees gathered for breakfast before reconvening for an afternoon of networking, presentations, and discussions that proved every bit as valuable as time on the water would have been. Representatives in attendance included Chautauqua County Executive P.J. Wendell, Chautauqua County Visitors Bureau Executive Director Andrew Nixon, Lisa Vanstrom from Senator George Barilla's office, Mason Palud from Assemblyman Andrew Molitor's office, Brian Haas from the Great Lakes Center of Buffalo State University, President Jack Code of Erie County Federation of Sportsmen, President Zen Alo of the Chautauqua County Federation of Sportsmen, Director Rich Davenport from the Erie County Fish Advisory Board, Brian Krawczyk from the Wyoming County Federation of Sportsmen, Pascal Wilkins from the State Department of Environmental Conservation Lake Erie Fisheries Station at Point Gratiot, outdoor media members Tyler France from Eastern Central Pennsylvania, author Mike Joyner from South Central New York, Dr. John Hageman from Ohio Outdoors, along with numerous Lake Erie charter captains, including Captain Tom Miranda, Captain Frank Schoenacker, and many others led by Eastern Lake Erie Charter Boat Association President Tim Steele and his wife Diane, a master coordinator who also serves as secretary for New York Conservation Council in Albany. Throughout the luncheon, speakers shared updates on ongoing projects and future initiatives aimed at protecting and promoting one of New York's most valuable natural resources, a common theme emerged from every presentation. Maintaining Lake Erie's exceptional recreational fishery requires continued investment in clean water, healthy fisheries management, well-maintained harbors, dependable marina services, accessible public boat launches, and the partnership that makes it all possible. Perhaps the most notable news came from Dunkirk Councilwoman Natalie Lukasiewicz, who presented an update on the Economic Development Director about a Dunkirk Revitalization Initiative project to repair and expand the marina docks on the east side of the Central Avenue Pier. Preliminary planning is underway right now by Chadwick Bay Marina owner Peter Smith, with construction likely in 2027. The fishing day agenda may have changed with the weather, but its purpose remained intact. By bringing together conservation leaders, elected officials, tourism professionals, outdoor communicators, and charter operators, the event reinforced that Lake Erie's future depends on cooperation and a shared commitment to preserving the resource that fuels both recreation and the local economy. Sometimes the best catch isn't measured in fish, but in the partnership that ensure future generations will continue to enjoy everything Lake Erie has to offer. Today kicks off day one of the two-day Northern Chautauqua Conservation Club's 21st annual walleye tournament, and a reported 90 team registered for the event. The club is located on the south end of Dunkirk Harbor. The economic benefit of such events provides logarithmic support of all of Dunkirk and the nearby area. The club grounds are open to the public each afternoon with raffles, refreshments, attire sales, and delicious barbecue foods. Gotta love the outdoors. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Jamestown Post-Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Articles from Thursday, July 30th of 2026. Lakewood Police Eye Camera Near Walmart. Article by John Whitaker. Lakewood Bust Eye Police are looking to submit a grant application that could result in cameras at Fairmount and Fairdale Avenues in the village to better monitor traffic around the Walmart Supercenter. Governor Kathy Hochul recently announced grant applications are being accepted for the $75 million Law Enforcement Technology Grant Program that makes money available to police departments and sheriff's offices to improve technology and modernize equipment, allowing them to more efficiently and effectively solve and prevent crime and improve officer and community safety. The area near Fairmount and Fairdale Avenues mark a location that is typically the location of a majority of the Lakewood Bust Eye Police Department's call volume between incidents at Walmart and traffic accidents at the busy intersection. We're looking at getting a brand new speed trailer that will have a message board on it. We're looking into a drone and then intersection cameras at Fairmount and Fairdale. The department has been having a lot of issues there, obviously because of Walmart with the shoplifting, but also accidents and just traffic going up and down Route 394. The minutes of the July 13th Lakewood Village Board meeting state. Administered by the State Division of Criminal Justice Services, the LETEC program can pay for a variety of equipment and technology, including but not limited to acoustic gunshot detection systems, drones, counter-drone mitigation systems, 3D crime scene laser scanners, trauma kits, and automated external defibrillators, body-worn cameras and vests, traffic and safety equipment, lighting, specialized records management systems, and patrol vehicle and officer equipment. Agencies also may purchase equipment and technology to support 911 centers, emergency management operations, parking and code enforcement, and communication platforms to engage with the community. The Lakewood Bust Eye Police Department is one of 500 agencies outside of New York City eligible to apply for LETECH grants. The State Division of Criminal Justice Services established a tiered funding system with maximum grant awards based on the number of full-time equivalent sworn officers that agencies employ, ranging from $100,000 for departments with 10 or fewer officers to $6 million for departments with more than 1,001 officers. Keeping New Yorkers safe means ensuring the men and women who protect our communities have the tools and technology they need to meet today's public safety challenges, Hochul said in a recent news release. This investment will help agencies modernize equipment, strengthen public safety, and improve information sharing capabilities to enhance the work they do to protect the communities they serve, while continuing our comprehensive approach to reducing crime across the state. In addition to the technology grant, the Lakewood Buskeye Police Department recently was awarded $31,000 for a second consecutive year through the District Attorney Discovery Grant Program. In 2025, funding awarded through the Discovery Grant Program paid for surveillance cameras inside and outside of the department. Second, we have upgraded the monitoring system associated with the cameras and the data storage. The department also began securing the department's entrances with a new keyless fob system. The 2026 grant will pay for additional infrastructure and technology upgrades to the department. In other news, the Lakewood Fire Department responded to 8 calls on the 4th of July, including one to extinguish a brush fire at Lakewood Beach from the 4th of July fireworks. Kurt Hallberg, Lakewood Fire Chief, recommended adjustments in the future for the annual fireworks display, including a barge anchored offshore, similar to what is used in Mayville, for Mayville's fireworks display. Fight to fly. County to appeal rejection of air service subsidy. Article by Gregory Bacon. It's possible the Federal Department of Transportation may have had incorrect information and did not receive Chautauqua County's full application to have commercial air service returned to Jamestown. Because of this, the county is appealing the Federal Department of Transportation's decision to reject an essential air service subsidy. Chautauqua County Airport's manager, John McAmire, sent an email to Legislative Chairman Pierre Chagnon regarding the issue. On June 26, the DOT issued Order 2026-6-23, denying the joint proposal submitted by the county and Southern Airways. The airport has initiated a full review on the decision and is currently preparing a formal response to the DOT requesting correction of apparent factual errors and reconsideration of the county's complete proposal, he wrote. Over the past several days, we have been diligently compiling supporting documentation, verifying records, and developing a clear and comprehensive reconsideration request. This work is ongoing, and we remain committed to ensuring that the county's submission is accurately reflected and properly evaluated by the DOT. The email was filed as part of the July communications to the county legislature. Contacted directly, McAmire said the DOT mischaracterized the size of the Jamestown Airport. We have drafted a request for consideration to the U.S. Department of Transportation asking the correction of the Buffalo Airport classification from a medium hub airport to a small hub airport, as referenced in the most current National Plan of Integrated Airport Systems, published on September 30th of 2024, he said. McAmire added that for some reason their full application was not reviewed. The department requested the full air service study commissioned by Chautauqua County and was provided only with a PowerPoint presentation. The full air service study was completed in 2024 and properly filed in the docket contained within the full proposal, he said. The study used modern data-driven methodologies drawing from DOT data sets, travel search behavior, and census-based modeling to distinguish between resident and non-resident travel. and validate demand profiles. The study information provided was intentionally constructed to provide transparent, actionable findings without overwhelming the reader with excess technical detail. McNamara said they plan to have the request sent to the DOT by the end of this week. County officials and Southern Airways have proposed scheduled commercial air service be restored from Jamestown with a new destination to Washington Dulles International Airport to provide direct connectivity to a major domestic and international hub. The proposed service would operate on a schedule accommodating both business and leisure travel with two daily round trips Monday through Saturday. Jamestown lost commercial service when the DOT terminated essential air service eligibility for Jamestown in January of 2018. That decision was made because the local airport wasn't meeting the federal standard of 10 passengers a day, nor the federal government's $200 per rider subsidy cap. August benefit to raise money for longtime Falconer bus driver. The name and face of Roger Hampman is one that is most likely familiar to many in the village of Falconer, where he has served as a bus driver for the school district for over 20 years. Now, Lampman is looking to the community for help as he battles stage 4 prostate cancer. A benefit is set for Lampman on August 16th from noon to 4 p.m. at the Celeron American Legion, 26 Jackson Avenue, Celeron. A spaghetti dinner will be provided by Brothers by Choice, with music by Dark Rock and Roll Roots Rhythm. There will also be a 50-50 raffle, basket raffles, and a bake sale. Donations are being accepted and can be made in many forms, including physical merchandise, food or baked goods, gift certificates for products and or services, and monetary donations. Basket donations for the auction are asked to be submitted by August 12th. Donations may be dropped off or mailed to Falconer community member and one of the event organizers, Amanda Eckert, at 1392 Route 394, Falconer. Roger has been a bus driver in Falconer for over 20 years, Eckert said. He has supported the students in this area and is a strong community member. He not only supports the school, but the community he lives in as well, and is known for being kind and always willing to help others. All donations and funding will go towards Lampman's ability to travel for appointments, along with other medical and monetary needs. Lampman is also a member of the Eagle Club. We greatly appreciate any support you can give Roger during this time, Eckert said. Any questions or for more information, Eckert can be contacted at 716-450-9800. Other event organizers can be contacted as follows. Natula Eckert, 716-450-3978, and David Huber at 716-969-3197. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from recent issues of the Jamestown Post-Journal. We read from the Jamestown Post-Journal every Saturday at 6 p.m. Your reader has been Bruce. Thank you for listening. And as always, make it a great day.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Niagara Falls Review. At 8 o'clock, we have Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal. And at 9 o'clock, we have Sports Illustrated. Stay with us for these readings and more. Thank you. program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability